This is Tamara reading the Gilman Star for the week of November 4th. We'll start with some local news. COVID concerns force closure of library. The Gilman Danforth Library will be closed until Monday, November 9th, because of concerns involving exposure to the COVID virus. Staff who receive negative results will then open the library to curbside service beginning on that Monday. It is hoped that the library can return to regular hours by November 16. The Board of Trustees meeting has been changed to November 19 at 6:30. The closure is taking place because a dependent of a library staff member has tested positive, and the staff member must quarantine for 14 days. Iroquois County goes to the polls. The presidential ballot count portion of the 2020 national election is still in doubt, but a number of other issues were settled Tuesday when voters went to the polls. One of the two hottest issues was the question of whether the state should amend the Constitution to change the way in which income taxes are levied. The state currently has a flat tax and a graduated tax with higher brackets, paying a higher percentage was proposed. The measure was defeated. Another issue on the ballot was the retention of Tom Kilbride, a Supreme Court judge from the 3rd Judicial District, for a third term. The issue made postcard printers and the post office plenty of money, but Kilbride fell short of earning another term by roughly 5%. How Iroquois County voted. The proposed amendment to the 1970 Illinois Constitution, which grants the state authority to impose higher income tax rates on higher income levels, yes, 995, no, 8,030. For president and vice president, Republican Trump-Pence, 7,820, Democratic Biden-Harris, 1,207, Green Hawkins-Walker, 35, Socialization and Liberation, LaRiva-Peltier, 2, American Solidarity, Carol Patel, 12, Libertarian, Jorgensen-Cohen, 102. For U.S. Senator, Republican Mark Curran, Jr., 7,313. Democratic, Richard Durbin, 1,395. Wilson Party, Willie Wilson, 208. Green, David F. Black, 72. Libertarian, Danny Maloof, 107. For 16th District Congress, Republican Adam Kinzinger, 8,128. Democratic Danny Brzozowski, 951. District 2 County Board, elect 3. Barbara Ophel, 1,747. Ernest Curtis, 1,576. David H. Penny, 1,433. And Paula Rosso, 491. Count offices. The following officials ran unopposed. County Clerk, 2-year term, Brian Suver. Circuit Clerk, Lisa K. Hines. State's Attorney, Jim Devine. Coroner, William Cheatham. Judicial. Judge of 21st Judicial Circuit to fill a vacancy of Clark E. Erickson. William Dickinson, 7,635. Kenneth Wright, 1,147. Judge of 21st Judicial Circuit to fill a vacancy of Michael J. Kick. Lindsay Parkhurst, 8,357. No other candidate. Judge of 21st Judicial Circuit to fill a vacancy of James Kinzer. Michael Sable, 8,357. No other candidate. Illinois Supreme Court retention of Tom Kilbride for 3rd Judicial District. Yes, 4,145. No, 4,463. Appellate Court, 3rd Judicial District retention of Mary McDade. Yes, 6,327. No, 1,924. Judge of Circuit Court, 21st Judicial District, retention of Adrian Wackett Albrecht. Yes, 6,404. No, 1,861. IW's Danforth Elementary closed for 2 weeks. The Iroquois West School District has closed the Danforth Elementary School as of Monday for 2 weeks, citing concern regarding the COVID virus and standards set by public health officials. No other buildings are affected. No Danforth students have tested positive, but there were 2 cases linked to students in the school, and district officials decided to take precautions. As of Monday, the IW school district has had 9 students and 4 staff members who have tested positive for the virus. The district's early childhood education program will be transitioning to remote learning for the next 2 weeks due to a second member testing positive. The decision was made in conjunction with the Iroquois County Department of Public Health. As it is a self-contained program for staff and students, all other grade levels and programs will remain with in-person learning. In regard to winter sports, while some health officials are saying there should not be winter sports, the IHSA, which is the governing body for high school sports, says winter sports are a go. IW Superintendent Angelo Leca said the board and the administration would continue to monitor the situation. While the 16th has been set as a start date for practices, the same date as the next school board meeting. The first scheduled game date is well beyond the board session, so the 16th will be treated as an open gym date that schools are currently running. Based on information available at that time, schools will either transition to practice sessions on Tuesday or continue open gyms. IW Athletic Director Christy Airy is also in contact with conference schools and other athletic directors. Iroquois County COVID-19 update from November 2nd. Lab confirmed cases, 577. Test results, 15,263. Negative, 14,615. Positive, 577. Deaths, 20. Of the confirmed cases, 491 have recovered and been released from isolation. 7 are hospitalized. 130 remain isolated at home. And by city, Gilman, 91, Clifton, 89, Ashcombe, 42, Danforth, 22, Onarga, 42, Watsika, 84, Crescent City, 22. And now the As We See It column. Veterans Day is coming up November 11th, and we would encourage you all to think of a veteran, someone from days past, or someone who may be overseas at this time, and take time to contact them. These days that might be electronically, either in person or through an email, but make no doubt about it, a message from home is always welcome. Several weeks ago, the Chicago Tribune ran a story about a man who was walking down an alley near his house and saw what appeared to be old letters sticking out of a garbage can. He looked at them and later realized that they were from a service member written during World War II and took them out of the garbage. To make a long story short, he took the time to find the relatives of the service member. The vet had been gone for several years, and his widow just recently, and gave them to other members of the family who had never seen them and were glad to have them. Mail call in the old days was truly something GIs look forward to, and we wondered out loud to Gilman Legion Commander Paul Kingery what families would write to their loved ones if they were still in the service. We went on an honor flight as a media rep a few years ago, and they held a mail call on the return flight from Washington, and it was still as popular that night as it was many years ago. If you could still write letters to your service member, what would you say these days? Let us know. While we're on the subjects of veterans, we will take the time to laud the efforts of the Onarga American Legion these past few years on the Wreaths Across America project, which the Post has sponsored. The turnouts have been great, to include a number of youths who placed wreaths on the stones of vets in the Onarga Cemetery. The Onarga Post is now helping Gilman Legionnaires get started on the project, and we printed a form recently for the Onarga Legion regarding the wreaths and how to take a sponsorship and honor a vet. This week we are running the same form for the Gilman Legion Post. The wreaths will be placed December 19th at 11 a.m., and volunteers are welcome. Pat Roberts is the chairperson for the Gilman Ceremony. We hear there was another field fire this week, also west of Gilman and Danforth, but some quick reactions, and with some help from farmers working nearby, the fire From nearby fields, the fire was put out. Make a Difference Day. The Gilman Women's Club has completed collecting and counting all of the donations from Make a Difference Day 2020. Instead of sending volunteers door to door, they placed collection boxes in banks, libraries, grocery stores, and schools. Some of the schools continued collecting for an extra week to celebrate Red Ribbon Week. This year, the project netted 2,168 food and household items and $495 for GOD's food pantry. This was slightly less than the 2018 totals and slightly more than the 2019 totals. Volunteers who collected and helped support donations were Anita Melgoza, Carol Lang, Jill Murphy, and Barb Uly. Illinois West sophomore Samantha Hartke and senior Connor Price both placed in the state sectional cross-country meet held last weekend at Elgin Harvest Christian. Hartke finished 11th with a time of 20:47:20, while the winner's time was 19:07:30. Price finished 17th with a time of 17:31:80, while the winning time by a runner from Hersher was 15:49:80. While there is no official state finals this year because of COVID-19 restrictions, an unofficial cross-country state final will be held this Friday at Chillicothe, to which runners have to personally apply. Both Hartke and Price will be running in the meet, with the runners from schools with the equivalent of 1A and 2A enrollments competing Friday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. First Trust Bank of Illinois, Danforth Branch, has made its annual donations to local 4-H clubs. Scott Strawson presented a check to Ashcombe Charger members, Gunner, Lacey, and Kania Temple. Jamie Senfer and Peyton Temple. Scott Strawson also presented a check to Danforth Blue Ribbons' Garrett Tammen. Women's Club to host annual Turkey Trot, November 14th. The Gilman Women's Club is hosting a 5K Turkey Trot on Saturday, November 14th. This year's event will benefit incentive programs at IW schools. Registration forms can be found on the Gilman Women's Club Facebook page. Pre-registration is due by November 6th. You can register on race day, starting at 8 a.m., with the race to follow at 9 a.m. The route is two loops, completely in town. Join us for a little huffing before the Thanksgiving stuffing. Iroquois County Blotter Report. October 30th, Iroquois County Sheriff's deputies arrested Edward W. Dill, 76 Gilman, on charges of predatory criminal sexual assault of a child and aggravated criminal sexual abuse following an investigation into allegations involving two juvenile victims. Mr. Dill was taken into custody Friday afternoon and transported to the county jail. November 1st, Sheriff's Police arrested Raven S. Setkowski, 18, of Milford, who was charged with illegal consumption of alcohol. Sheriff's Police arrested Dustin J. Petticord, 18, Sheldon, who was charged with illegal consumption of alcohol. St. Paul's Lutheran School of Woodworth has a drive-through fish dinner Saturday, November 14th. The menu includes two pieces of fish, coleslaw, chips, cookies. Drive-through serving begins at 11 a.m. and proceeds benefit the school's technology fund. St. Paul's Lutheran School is at 108 West Woodworth Road, Milford. Headlines That Should Frighten Every American by Russ Mann. The 2020 election has our future as a democracy under assault in ways that our forefathers never could have imagined. Maybe it was naivety from their time, a different time when men who rose to high levels of society and government had been vetted through years of public service and had proven themselves to be ethical, responsible, and trustworthy. Recent news stories have raised concerns that were not anticipated when this nation was formed, but yes, it was a different time. We have staked the whole of all our political institutions upon the capacity of mankind for self-government, upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God. James Madison. One, Wisconsin can't count mail-in ballots received after Election Day, Supreme Court rules. From The Guardian, Monday, the 26th of October, 2020. Headline number one above reports that even though in the Wisconsin 2020 primary, ballots postmarked before Election Day could be counted after in-person voting had stopped, now for the general election on November 3rd, the U.S. Supreme Court has intervened, sided with Republicans, and overturned a state court decision ruling that counting must stop when the polls close. While the United States Constitution does determine the rules for the election of federal officials, state laws govern elections in the United States, the eligibility of voters, and the running of each state's electoral college. Until now, federal courts have not interceded in state matters. In other words, for election 2020 in Wisconsin, if you have followed the rules and exercised your right as an American citizen and voted before Election Day, but the post office that President Trump sabotaged by putting his man in charge didn't deliver your mail before the Trump-stacked Supreme Court decided the count must stop, your constitutional right to take part in choosing your representatives is null and void. Headline 2. Supreme Court says Alabama can ban curbside voting amid COVID-19 pandemic. From the Huffington Post, 21st of October. Headline 3. Donald Trump gave the conservative legal movement everything they ever wanted. News Trends, 27 October. Headlines 2 and 3 highlight that our system of law and order and equal justice under the law are corrupted, again with stacked courts deciding state laws. Efforts by the sitting president to obstruct and to degrade the veracity of the election system have been blatantly overt. The courts are mandated to interpret constitutional laws, but independent of political influence. Yet at the behest of the Federalist Society, they have been stacked with extreme conservative judges from the federal district's courts level all the way to the Supreme Court. During the Obama administration, a McConnell-led Senate refused to advance any and all federal judge appointments by the 44th president, saving 194 positions, hopefully for one of their own to appoint. And that's not counting a Supreme Court appointment that was held up for nearly a year because it was too close to an election. Then with the sudden death of Justice Ginsburg, McConnell hypocritically fast-tracked the seating of Amy Coney Barrett just 1 week from the 2020 election. Those Trump judges have paid off for Trump and the GOP with judgments against rules that would have made it safer for people most at risk and frightened by the runaway spike in COVID-19 in the run-up to the election. In fact, the Trump-stacked Supreme Court potentially played as super spreader advocates by causing determined voters to abandon the Trump de joy corrupted mail service and to vote in person and risking not only pandemic concerns but potential violence and or intimidation. Headline 4. Michigan judge strikes down ban on open carry of guns at polling places on Election Day. CNN, 27 October. Headline 5. Biden staff call 911 after bus swarmed by Trump supporters on Texas highway. USA Today, 31 October. Headlines 5 and 6 are about intimidation. Convoys of Trump supporters and pickup trucks were videotaped in Texas surrounding a Biden bus. That action not only met with Donald Trump's approval, but he expressed delight. And heavily self-armed, self-appointed militias emulating rebels in some banana republic have taken to boldly terrorizing anyone who is not in their political camp. The FBI has thwarted militia kidnapping plots against two state governors and one big city mayor. This no longer looks like election time in a free republic. By now the voting is over, but the counting, well, we'll see. We may not yet have a clear winner as President of the United States, whether President 45 gets a second term or if we have elected President 46. There's a lot at stake for both political camps as we move toward an uncertain future. If we swear in a President Joe Biden and a Vice President Kamala Harris, there will be a formidable task of returning the government of the United States to the people. As of now, under the Trump administration, virtually every department of government has been relegated to the hands of special interests. In some cases, government agencies are being run by former employees of or lobbyists for the areas of the economy that are regulated by that department. Rarely are policies made in the interest of taxpayers in general, and in every case, department heads are chosen for their undying loyalty to a president and the advancement of his interest rather than to the nation, the Constitution, and an oath of office. A President Biden will need to reestablish relationships with both allies and adversaries around the world, as a chaotic Trump administration has lost all credibility with international governments. It's interesting that Trump's BFF, President Putin of Russia, shot candidate Trump's October surprise, Rudy Giuliani's Hunter Biden emails, out of the saddle. Putin stated that he saw nothing criminal in Hunter Biden's past business ties with Ukraine or Russia. It's been 5 years of chaos, hatred, bigotry, and division, and America is tired of it. And as evident in the listed headlines above, a President Biden will need to reestablish a fair election system that Americans as well as our allies can have confidence in. This is 21st century America. Voting should be at least as easy as a trip to Walmart. Yet voter obstruction was rampant. When the final count is in, whoever the headlines declare will lead the nation for the next 4 years, another term for President Trump, or an ex-vice president now returning to the White House as President Biden, concerned Americans have come out in record numbers to exercise their right to vote. If Donald Trump is lost, he knows full well that he could be facing indictments for a laundry list of federal and state charges. But if he has, by obstruction and deceit, won, those things that a President Biden could do to right the ship of state will likely never happen, and we may find ourselves with no way back to an America of and by the people. We'll turn now to the death notices for the week. Lorraine E. Adams, 93, of Danforth, passed away October 31st at Piper City Rehab and Living Center. Private graveside services will be held at Danforth Cemetery. Arrangements by Knapp Redinius Funeral Home in Gilman. Please share a memory of Lorraine at knappfuneralhomes.com. Julia A. Fairley, 82, of Gilman, passed away on Thursday, October 29th, at Iroquois Resident Home in Watseka. A celebration of life service will be held at a later date. Burial will take place at Melvin Cemetery. Arrangements were made by Knapp Redinius Funeral Home in Gilman. Memorials may be made to the Iroquois Resident Home in Watseka. Please share a memory of Julia at knappfuneralhomes.com. Constance Pauline Schmid, 92, of Gilman, passed away on October 30th at her residence. Services were held on November 3rd at the Gilman Cemetery, with Vicki Killis officiating. Memorials may be made to Iroquois Memorial Hospice, Gilman Fire Department, or to the donor's choice. Arrangements were made by Knapp Redinius Funeral Home in Gilman. Juana Ochoa, 85, of Gilman, passed away on Wednesday, October 28th, at her home. Funeral services and burial were held Saturday, October 31st. Burial took place at Onarga Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the donor's choice. Please sign her guest book at bayerfuneralhome.com. This concludes the reading of the death notices for the week, and now we'll return to local news. Veterans Day Appreciation Breakfast, set for Wednesday, November 11th, has been canceled due to the most recent pandemic restrictions. According to Nita Benner, one of the co-organizers of the event, it is hoped to be able to reschedule the breakfast in the near future. CCGS conduct mock election. Since 1984, Jody Munsterman taught her fifth grade students at Crescent City Grade School about the election process by hosting a mock U.S. presidential election. The election is the conclusion of a month-long unit of social studies. This year, due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the school being closed on Election Day, the process was less dramatic, but still an exciting process. Mrs. Munsterman's classroom this year is combined. It's made up of fourth and fifth grade students. Her students studied the election process and learned how a president is elected in the United States. The mock election took place on Monday, November 2nd, and followed COVID-19 regulations. Students cast their votes in their own classrooms. Each teacher collected the ballots and placed them in a ballot box located in the teacher's lounge. The ballots were divided among her fourth and fifth graders, who tallied the results. The results were Donald Trump, 42 votes, Joe Biden, 14 votes, and write-in candidate Kanye West 1 vote. Shortly before school dismissed for the day, winners were announced over the public address system. The 4th-5th graders enjoyed playing presidential and first lady Jingo after lunch. If your birthday falls between November 5th and November 11th and appears on the birthday list in the Gilman Star in print, you're entitled to a free sundae at the Gilman Dairy Queen or Gilman McDonald's, a quarter pound of fudge from the front porch, and a free movie at the Onarga Theater. Just clip and take the birthday list to the Gilman Dairy Queen, the Gilman McDonald's, the front porch, or the Onarga Theater. From State Representative Tom Bennett on State Department of Employment Security. The Illinois Department of Employment Security gets negative performance review checks for bills.png. The Better Government Association, BGA, has released a study finding that the Illinois Department of Employment Security, IDES, was not prepared for the more than 2 million unemployment claims which have been filed over the past 7 months due to the coronavirus outbreak. Because of this lack of preparation, many of those applying for unemployment insurance, UI benefits, had to contend with extremely long wait times before they could begin getting assistance checks. Illinoisans faced wait times considerably longer than those applying in other states. The study looked at how many UI applications were able to be reviewed and checks mailed within 7 days of initial application. Before the pandemic, IDES reached this goal about 80% of the time, but by this summer it was only getting UI benefits to applicants within 7 days about 1% of the time. Meanwhile, household expenses continued to mount while applicants waited. IDES also fell short in 4 other categories as measured by the U.S. Department of Labor and other federal agencies. These benchmarks included detection of overpayments or improper payments and steps taken to recover mistaken payments. A bipartisan group of lawmakers has been calling for public hearings into these failures, as they harm both the applicants who have to wait such a long time for benefits and the taxpayers who must swallow the costs of funds that are paid out in error. Other states have met the challenge posed by the pandemic. Illinois should look to their examples to improve their own system. IHSA announces return of high school basketball. Last spring, the pandemic hit just as the Illinois High School Association was set to kick off its state basketball tournament. Spring sports were canceled, as well as football this fall. But this week, the IHSA announced that it would be starting boys and girls basketball practices on November 16th and games on November 30th. Read the full IHSA statement. The Illinois State Board of Education issued its response on Thursday. I've reached out to the IHSA to learn more about their plans for safely conducting a basketball season. They are engaging with school superintendents, and ultimately the decision of whether or not to participate will be made at the local level. Schools and sports are important parts of our communities and our society. Neighboring states have found ways to safely restart high school sports, as has the Big Ten Conference with college sports. This must be done safely, however, and I was glad to see that the IHSA is prioritizing health and safety in its plan and also involving local school officials in the decision-making process. How much do we owe? As of the time of this writing, the state of Illinois owes $8,075,527,376 in unpaid bills to state vendors. 1 year ago, the backlog stood at $6.2 billion. This figure represents the amount of bills submitted to the Office of the Comptroller and still awaiting payment. It does not include debts that can only be estimated, which is subject, such as our unfunded pension liability, which is subject to a wide range of factors and has been estimated to be more than $137 billion. This has been Tamara reading the Gilman Star. I hope to read with you again soon.